Hi, this is Lizzie O'Leary, the host of Marketplace Weekend, with an extended interview from our upcoming show. This week on Netflix, you'll be able to stream the documentary Anita, about probably the most famous woman in the U.S. with that name, Anita Hill, and her role in Justice Clarence Thomas's 1991 confirmation hearings when she accused him of sexual harassment. She'll also be played by Kerry Washington in an upcoming feature film that's being developed by HBO. We had the chance to talk with her about her life then and now, where she studies things like sexual harassment and workplace diversity as a professor of social policy, law, and women's studies at Brandeis University. Professor Hill, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I noticed in this documentary, Anita, that is being released on Netflix now, there is a scene in which young girls are asked if they know who you are. And I'm wondering how you want them to know who you are.
I want them to know who I am as a person who truly believes in equality and who is dedicating her life really to the pursuit of equality, whether it's gender equality or racial equality or really, as we say now, the combination. But that's who I want them to see when they see me and when they think about me and what I stand for.
How does that translate, do you think, into economic life for women or beyond that? When we look at, say, how women are paid or whether or not sexual harassment suits actually succeed?
We now understand that the laws against sexual harassment really are about women's ability to work and perform and achieve economically and socially in the workplace and in the marketplace. And so we don't really separate out sexual harassment from economic equality. Those things go hand in hand. And so what we know is that if women are in situations where they're harassed, that there is an economic impact to their abilities to move forward in the workplace. It sometimes results even in them not getting promotions or not getting the raises that they deserve because they may have their performance impacted by the environment and the culture in which they exist.
You wrote an essay for Fortune after the Ellen Pao trial saying that the sunlight is beginning to do its work, quoting Justice Brandeis. I'm a little skeptical of that. Is it? I mean, she lost.
Ellen Pao did lose her case, but that doesn't mean that there isn't some value in it. I'll use my own example. In 1991, when I testified, people concluded that I had lost. Nevertheless, in the years that followed my testimony, more and more women came forward to claim that they had been harassed and discriminated against in their workplaces. So just knowing what harassment was, what discrimination is and was, increased the number of complaints. And I suspect that's what's going to happen in this situation. Women, their attorneys, the general public will have a better understanding about workplace discrimination. And I believe it's going to encourage more people to come forward and bring their suits.
We are talking about the idea of the chase, sort of writ broadly in our show this week. And I'm wondering, what do you feel like you've been chasing since 91?
The chase to really understand what gender equality means in 2015 or in the 21st century. How does it truly get played out, particularly in the workplace? We now, for example, businesses and business schools encourage collaboration. Well, if you, in fact, want collaboration, you have to bring in different people who come in and who are valued for their own experiences and their own perspectives. You can't have collaboration, true collaboration, if everyone comes in with the same background and the same perspective. And you can't have true collaboration if some ideas and some perspectives are privileged over others. Mm. So we now have a mounting evidence that when women are included in the workplace, when they're part of work groups, that the decisions that are made are better. They're more effective, they're more efficient, and in the long run, they benefit employers. And so we've got to understand what our structures are, what our systems are doing, not only to keep women out of those groups, but when we allow women to become part of those groups, what are we doing to make sure that they're heard and valued?
You're the expert now, but you were the example. Your life was flayed open. Was that worth it?
Well, it was worth it in the long run, I think, because, as I've said, a lot of people have come forward since that. And I'm fortunate to hear from people who say that they came forward because of my example. But I think it's always worth it to have the truth come forward and to have our stories out in the public and to have these large public conversations that include the reality of our experiences. We're not going to get to our goal of equality by hiding women's experiences. That has to be revealed. Whatever the particular outcome of an incident is, whether it's the POW decision or what happened to me in 1991 with the Senate Judiciary Committee, the important thing in the long run is that it opens up the dialogue and it allows more people to come forward.
I was in high school in Washington, D.C. in 1991, and I remember watching you literally be chased through Senate office buildings. I am wondering what it is like to have your name forever associated with Justice Thomas. After all, I'm asking you these questions 24 years after the fact.
It's interesting that you say that my name is associated with Justice Thomas. That is in part true. But in reality, my name is more associated with the issues, the issue of gender equality, women in the workplace, sexual harassment. And what I like to think is that if my name is associated with progress toward equality, toward ending sexual harassment, I'm okay with that.
Joe Biden led the questioning on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's the vice president now. Did he fail you?
I think the way the hearing was conducted failed not only me, but it failed the American public.
But the vice president in particular?
Well, he ran the hearings, and I'll leave you to conclude whatever you would like about that. It was his job to run the hearings. We have to look at how the hearings were run, whether they were aimed at getting to the truth or whether they were aimed at just getting it done with so that we could move on and the public wouldn't really understand what the truth was afterwards. But I think what is really important is that as we look back on those hearings, there are lots of examples of what we need to do now, whether it is a thorough investigation of complaints, whether it is conducting hearings so that both sides are able to come forward and not have their testimony judged by myth, but by facts and evidence. And finally, what the outcomes would be. What are the consequences of those hearings? All of those things are things that we can learn from 1991's example and really apply to workplaces today.
You know, one of the things that I wonder, because we have seen, obviously, you're extremely successful now, what were the personal economic ramifications like after coming forward and then trying to move on?
Well, there were decisions that I had to make after 1991 and after the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. For example, my tenured job at the University of Oklahoma was threatened publicly by state officials who wanted to remove my tenure, revoke my tenure. I was at risk, really, in many ways, the pressure that was put on me to be quiet afterward and sort of disappear, I believe, had an impact on me economically. But it also had an impact on my colleagues, and the culture and climate in which I was working changed dramatically after 1991. Hmm. You'd never know exactly how large the impact was or how big of an effect that had on me economically. It's hard to qualify, and it's hard to truly quantify. But it changed. The culture changed. The climate for me to move forward and to advance in my career changed. And so I had to make some decisions to move on to another workplace so that I could really live and work fully and freely in an environment that valued my voice.
I am curious what it is like for you now to see a Black woman confirmed as the Attorney General of the United States.
I'll start back with 1992 when Carol Moseley Braun was confirmed as the first African-American woman who became a senator in the U.S. Senate. That was monumental. And my mother and I shared that experience. And she was so thrilled to see that in her lifetime. My mother is now deceased. And it's almost 24 years later. And we are seeing the first African-American woman Attorney General, Chief Law Enforcement Agent for the country. I say it's about time. I celebrate it. And I hope that what it does is open up the opportunities for others.
Why do you think there is a moment now where there is so much interest in your story?
Without sounding too egotistical, I believe there's been an interest in the story for 24 years. I talk to people who say, I can remember exactly where I was when I heard your testimony, or I can remember what I was doing and the reaction of people around me when I heard your testimony. Now, I'm also hearing from younger women, maybe they didn't have any understanding of what was happening in October of 1991 in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. But now they're saying, I really do understand. I'm in the workplace now, and I understand exactly what your experience was about and why it was important. So I believe that the interest has been ongoing, and it's growing as more and more young women get into the workplace. Women were very much a part of the energy that happened after the hearings to create some changes in the workplaces. Not a lot of men seemed to understand why it was important. In the past 24 years, that has changed. Men are coming to me now and saying, now I understand why what you did was important, and I understand the truth in your testimony. And they understand it in part because they have daughters. They're concerned that their daughters have an equal chance in the workplace. That's a change that's significant.
On a much lighter note, you are going to be played by Kerry Washington.
Yes.
How's that feel?
Well, it's very interesting. I'm not sure that I'm quite ready to see somebody portray me on the screen. But if I am ever going to get ready, I can't imagine anyone better to do it than Kerry Washington.
Professor Anita Hill, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.